start Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, the second line. Some halachas of the Yomim Noiroi. The Omar Rabbe Bar Chinen is Sabe Mishmei Derav. Rabbe Bar Chinene, the elder, said in the name of Rab, Kol HaShana Kula, all year, Adam Mispalel Ha'el HaKadosh, Melech HaHetzlaka U'Mishpat. All year, in the fourth Brach of Shemana Esra, you say, Ha'el HaKadosh. In the Brach of Hashiva Shefteini, you conclude, Melech HaHetzlaka U'Mishpat. Chutz me'aseres yomim shebein Rosh Hashanah v'yom HaKippur. Except for the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, shemispalel ha-melech ha-kodosh ve-ha-melech ha-mishpat. During those days you say ha-melech ha-kodosh instead of ha-kel ha-kodosh, and ha-melech ha-mishpat instead of melech oyhev tzedako mishpat. Sorry? We're talking about the third and Hashiva. Both those blessings, which number does Hashiva come out? I'm not sure. But both of those blessings we switch in the 10 days. Rosh Hashanah, three, and Kippur. Now, Rabba means to say that if you did not say it this way, you aren't Yoytze. Not just that you should make the switch, but if not, you're not Yoytze. So you should make the switch, and it's essential. Rabbi Elazar says, "Afilo Omar Hakel Hakadosh Yotze." Even if you do say El Hakadosh, you Yotze. Shenema, because may have noticed this. I noticed it in the Tefillah of Shemini Esrei. We're told, "Don't say El Hakadosh. Say Amelech Hakadosh." Right? But then, what pasuk do we say right before we finish off the bracha? Pasuk says, "Vayigba Hashem Tzivakos Bamishpat." And Hashem of hosts became exalted through judgment. The El HaKadosh Nikdash Mitzdaka. And okay, El HaKadosh Mamish, the same term that we're saying not to use during the Yom Noraim, that's the way it's presented in this pasuk, which is talking about Hashem's judgment. It says, El HaKadosh. So you see, what's this pasuk referring to? It's a pasuk in Yeshaya that talks about Hashem implementing justice. Amosai vayigba Hashem tzvokois b'mishpat. When is it that Hashem exalts himself through his judgment? Elu asara yomim shemer Rosh Hashanah v'ad Yom HaKippurim. Those are the 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. Ve'ka omar ha'el HaKadosh. And yet, you see that the pasuk itself refers to him as ha'el HaKadosh. So you see that it is appropriate to say ha'el HaKadosh during that time. Okay, so we have a machloikis, whether it's acceptable to say okay la kodesh. Meaning, what do these words mean? What does the word el denote? El denote means a power, right? That's really what the word el means. El, we use it as the name of Hashem, but it also appears in certain places not as Hashem's name. The word el means power. When we talk about el as referring to Hashem, we mean the ultimate power, the almighty, we might call it that way, the ultimate power. So, usually we say the holy power, but on these days, Rabbi is telling us, say the holy king. Now, my Havala, so what's the conclusion here? Omar Av Yosef says, Ha'el HaKadosh U'melech HaHetzdaka U'mishpat. Now, even during these 10 days, it's acceptable to say Ha'el HaKadosh, the holy power, and Melech Ha'ev Tzedakah U'Mishpat, the king who loves righteousness and justice. Rabbi Omar, and Rabbi says, no, you must make those changes. HaMelech HaKadosh, you have to say, the holy king, VeHaMelech HaMishpat, and you must say, the king of judgment, not the king who loves righteousness and judgment. What's that? Oh, so let's see. Vehilchis akir Rabba. And the halacha follows Rabba. which essentially means that, right, you're not yoitze if you did not say these changes right. If you made a mistake, well, it depends if you went on or not. Generally, if you realize at the end of Shemana Esrei that you made a mistake, you daven again. Yeah. Once you've finished with that bracha, you moved on, you have to go back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. You start again. What's that? If you realize it within Toich Kedei Dibur, again within that 3 second time frame, you can just switch it, you just say HaMelech HaKodesh instead. But once you miss that, you go back to the beginning of Shemana Esrei. Okay, let's just understand what the idea here is. We do this every year, but let's understand. Okay, we know that yes, the days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur is when Hashem is establishing Himself as King over the world. Now, what does this mean? What's the idea here? We say El HaKadosh, generally we're saying the great power, right? The holy power. Holy power, what does it mean Hashem is the holy power? It means that really He's the life of everything. Hashem is the source of all energy, right? That's really what El denotes. Hashem is the source of all energy. Meaning, we know that there are kind of two ways we relate to Hashem. More than two ways, but we talk a lot of times about Hashem really is the essence of everything. Hashem is keeping us alive at all times, etc., etc. Now, that engenders very much more of a feeling of closeness to Hashem than awe, let's say. Really should engender both. But, like, Hashem is mamish with me and everything. He's the source of my life, etc., etc. He's providing me with my existence at all times. That's really what Kael denotes. But at the same time, you have to realize that at the end of the day, you're a creature and He's your king. And therefore, you have to don't always just say, yeah, well, Hashem is just a part of me. You have to be able to relate to Him as a subject towards His master. And this is especially relevant in the days of the Yomim Noraim. And Hashem is beginning His world anew. Hashem begins the world, which means that we're beginning our existence on that time. It's like Rosh Hashanah, the world starts again. We are recreated on Rosh Hashanah. The first thing we have to acknowledge, we are creatures, property of a master. And that's why, especially during these days, we relate to Hashem as, we put the big focus on Melech, Melech, Melech. These are the days that, that's the whole avodah of Rosh Hashanah. The whole focus of Rosh Hashanah is to crown Hashem as the Melech. We begin our existence with that acknowledgement, with that recognition of the fact that we are subject and He's a Melech. It's a little bit deeper. Let's understand what's really going on. When Hashem creates a world, and Hashem creates a world full of people and full of creatures, Hashem, in a way, is taking a risk. In a way, He's taking a risk. How's that? Hashem is the absolutely controls everything, except one thing: our bechira. Our bechira is in our hands. But the thought that free choice, yeah. Our choice to do right or to do wrong. Or in other words, to further Hashem's cause or to simply ignore Hashem. The thought that Hashem would let go and compromise His honor in such a way, put it into our hands, we don't appreciate the magnitude of such a thought. In the upper world, Malachim, it says there's no such thing. Hashem is in absolute control, and it's not possible for there to be any pocket of existence which Hashem's absolute supremacy and rulership is not recognized. Therefore, Hashem creates a pocket of existence where His will could be defied. That, in a sense, is unthinkable. Of course, we're born into it, so we don't think of it that way. But the truth is that when you're thinking of it from a higher world perspective, the concept of our world is fantastic. Fantastic in the sense of fantasy, like it can't really be. Chaim Volozhiner says, when you really understand what Hashem is about, so you don't understand how there could be this world. Right? It doesn't make sense. How could there be an area of existence where Hashem's supremacy could not be recognized? So therefore, the answer to that all is, But yes, that is the glorious function that we have. Where Hashem let go, we fill the void. We fill the void by showing that even when Hashem lets go, we fill the void with acknowledgement and fulfillment of Hashem. But at the end of the day, you know what it's like? I remember when we used to go, when we would be in the mountains, I would go with my father up to the mountains, you know, somewhere deep in the mountains in Pennsylvania, in the middle of nowhere. I was a 14-year-old kid, I'd beg him to let me drive a little bit. Right? And sometimes he would let me, but he would always keep his foot right there by the brake, right? I'd say, put your foot on the other side, put your foot on the other side, do it all the way already. Couldn't do that, right? It's too risky. Right? That's actually what Hashem is doing. Hashem is letting go. There can't be, it's unthinkable that there should be an existence where Hashem's will is not fully implemented all the way. Letting go, yeah, by creating an area of existence where His will could be not obeyed. Where it's possible for His will not to be fulfilled. In other words, what's that? Well, let's see. If Hashem would operate that way, the world would have been gone a long time ago. Meaning, a part of what we have to appreciate is that Hashem does not operate that way. Meaning Hashem said, I am considering it a good idea for Hashem's purposes, whatever it is, that this is the way it should work. Hashem is not going to push the reset button every time it goes awry. If Hashem decided there's going to be a 6,000 year pocket of existence in which I withdraw and I leave it up to the human beings to do what I want or not, then even if things mamish mess up, Hashem is, if we'll put it this way, Hashem is mature. Right? He's not going to go resetting things, he's not going to go undoing the whole system because, hey, you folks messed up. Hashem decreed, this is the way it's going to be for 6,000 years, this is the way it's going to be for 6,000 years. Hashem does manipulate things and guide things in a certain direction. But at the end of the day, yes, it's possible for Hashem's will, for Hashem's honor, for Hashem's desire to be trampled. And it was done by Adam, and we have plenty of other examples. Yeah? Right? So, therefore, Hashem, so to speak, was taking a chance. By letting go, that was a very, very big risk when we realized that the honor of Hashem is the most, it's something of paramount importance.
Hashem didn't build in planned disobedience.
What's that?
Hashem did not build in that.
No. No. There's Bechira. Bechira means that it's our free choice. We decide if we want to conform to Hashem's will or not. Which means that it's possible not to. What? There is reward and punishment, but Hashem did not create the world for people to disobey and get punished. Right? It means that the world's purpose was not properly met. When a person disobeys Hashem and then goes to Gehenim, that person's existence was a failure. And it was a sacrilege in the sense of Hashem's honor. If we understand that Hashem's honor is the most important thing there is, and that's all that matters, then we can properly appreciate it. But it's really mind-boggling that Hashem could let go of that. So the Rav Shachaim says that. The way he puts it down is like, it's not understandable that Hashem would do such a thing. It's just, we don't understand Hashem. And Hashem would let go. So therefore, when we appreciate that, our hearts should be pounding when we realize the gravity of what's incumbent on us, and that we have to fill that void, and that it's up to us. And therefore, number one is, you began existence, the first thing is you declare Hashem Melech. And that's why it's so important. That's how the year starts. The year begins again, Hashem Melech. Also, Rav Hirsch says, Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says, that's the concept of Shabbos. What's Shabbos? Shabbos is the first day of man's existence in the world, right? Man was created Friday. First day of man's existence in the world is Shabbos. Man starts by saying, this is not my world. And that's why we don't do malachas. What are malachas? Malachas are not labor. You know, if you want, you can make a really heavy dresser and schlep it back and forth and sweat all day on Shabbos. Right? Malachas are not labor. Malachas are creative activities. All the 39 malachas are creative activities, meaning functions of creation. You're shaping the world on a small scale and a larger scale. But that's what you're doing. Meaning, you're fulfilling Hashem's statement that you rule the world. But before we do that, we have to have the right perspective on that. And therefore, we begin our existence on Shabbos by, we don't touch. We don't touch because at the end of the day, it's not our world. It's Hashem's world. Now that we've acknowledged that, we move into the 6 days of Maaseh. We can do what we want. Well, you don't tinker with the world. No malacha. This is Hashem's world. He doesn't want you touching today. Let go. Oh, so 1 minute. So now. So this is what we were starting to explain before. So therefore, the whole focus of everything about the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is Melech, Melech, Melech. He's a king. Right? As in, we are subjects, he's a king. He's the boss, we are underlings. Eil is one of the names we use of Hashem, but it does not necessarily denote that. If we just translate all the words, all the names of Hashem, Eil, Elikim, Yudke, Vavke, Adoi, all those just as gods, so they all mean the same thing. But each one is expressing a different element. Is Shakai, there are very many names of Hashem. Eil is expressing the fact that he is the source of all energy. He's the source of our existence. That's not necessarily denoting rulership. It might be denoting, on the contrary, it might be denoting closeness. You might see his love for us and the fact that he's busy keeping us and maintaining us all the time, sustaining us all the time. But that element of we are subjects, he's the boss, that is expressed through Melech. And that is the focus of those days. The 10 days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's what we're nailing it, hammering into our heads, and expressing in the world.
So would it be better if it said, a cow on Melech? Use both.
What's that?
Is a cow on Melech? Use both.
Why not use both? I don't know why we don't use both. Maybe we, one focus at a time. One focus at a time.
Melech is not a name of Hashem. It seems like it's a degradation.
It's a, okay, no, it's not a degradation. It's a title for Hashem. It's not a name in that sense, but it's a title for Hashem. These days, the focus is something else. That's the point here. The focus is Melech. Okay, so that's the idea here. But there are a few things that we have to understand. Melech HaKadosh, okay, we understand. You switch it down. Melech HaKadosh, very good. But how come Melech HaKadosh stuck on Mishpat? There we are saying Melech. Right? The truth is, I wondered about this. I never really knew until I learned the sugya now. We are saying Melech. He said, no. Don't say that. Say HaMelech HaMishpat. And we saw here in the Gemara that essentially, if you don't say HaMelech HaMishpat, you're not Yaitze. It's okay, HaKadosh. You didn't say HaMelech HaKadosh, you understand. You omitted that mention of Hashem's rulership. You got to go back. But here, instead of saying the King of Judgment, he said, the king who loves righteousness and judgment. What's wrong with that?
He's saying the king that he's biased. That he's sitting on the throne of judgment. He shouldn't be biased.
Why biased?
Because if you're for him, he's very likes
him. I have what? Tzedakah. It's a mishpat. He loves mishpat. A king who loves mishpat. Tzedakah is also there. No. Here tzedakah means the same thing. It means justness. It's tzedakah in this sense, in the context of this pasuk from Yeshayah, both mean the same thing. It means the justice, the righteousness. So, what's the problem? So, there's a couple of points here. So first of all, the Mefarshim say that when you know what? We'll step back for a moment. Well, first we'll approach this from the halachic angle. This question was asked by the brother of the Torah. Rabbeinu Yechiel asked the Torah this question. He said, I don't understand why Melech Oyhei Tzedakah Mishpat should be so much worse than HaMelech HaMishpat, the King of Judgment. The King who loves righteousness and judgment. What's the problem? And the Torah doesn't really give an answer. He says this is a difficulty. He doesn't really give an answer. The only thing he says is that, you know what? The truth is, there's a different version of that bracha. There are those who don't say Melech Lehev Tzadokah Mishpat. They say Ha'el HaMishpat. And he says, I believe that this is a proof to that. If he would say that normally the conclusion of that bracha is Ha'el HaMishpat, then we understand. During, you're not making any mention of a king. During the Yom Ha'Raim, you should switch that for mention of a king. Say Melech Lehev Tzadokah Mishpat. But it, all year you're saying Melech Lehev Tzadokah Mishpat, why should it be so essential to switch it to HaMelech HaMishpat? The king who loves righteousness and judgment, to switch it to the king of judgment. And therefore he says, in my eyes, Rabbi Nechiel says, and the Torah seems to agree with him, this is a proof that actually the correct thing to say is all year, Ha'el HaMishpat. And in Yom Ha'Raim you're supposed to switch it to HaMelech HaMishpat. Mamish the same as HaKel HaKodesh. Surprising, and it's certainly not the way it works in our Sidurim. But I will note that this actually constitutes the basis for halacha lemaisa machlokes between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Ramah therefore says, okay, the reason the Gemara made such a big deal about saying HaMelech HaMishpat is because normally they said HaKel HaMishpat. So therefore the Ramah says, us who say Melech Oyheit Soko Mishpat, we who say all throughout the year, the king who loves righteousness and mishpat, if we messed it up and we didn't say HaMelech HaMishpat, we just said the usual Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, we do not have to go back. That's the Ramah's ruling Lamaisa. Basically because of this question. Why should HaMelech HaMishpat be so much worse than Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat? Lamaisa, according to the Ramah, based on Rabbeinu Yechiel, it's true, it's not. And therefore, us, who all throughout the year say Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, the king who loves righteousness and judgment, if we said that instead of HaMelech HaMishpat, we do not have to go back. In that bracha, HaKel HaKodesh, yes, but in Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, not. That is the bottom line ruling for Ashkenazim. We're going to get to the Shulchan Aruch in a minute. So, but that's the bottom line ruling for Ashkenazim. Therefore, we draw this distinction and we say, yes, all the talk about having to go back if you missed the Melech HaMishpat is only if you usually say HaKel HaMishpat. But if you always say Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, you don't go back. So bottom line for us, you messed up by HaKel HaKodesh, you said HaKel HaKodesh, you didn't switch it with HaMelech HaKodesh, you gotta go back. You said HaMelech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, instead of HaMelech HaMishpat, you do not have to go back. That's the bottom line for the Ashkenazim. Shulchan Aruch rules otherwise. He says no. He presents the ruling that if you said Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, as usual throughout the year, the king who loves righteousness and judgment, that is no good. You do have to go back because you didn't say the king of judgment. You said the king who loves righteousness and judgment. You must go back. So, how are we to understand this? So here the Mepharshim say as follows. This is something that the Taz says and others say. That no, there is a difference between, a big difference between, Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat and HaMelech HaMishpat. Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat, a king who loves righteousness and justice, simply denotes that he considers a value. That's all. It's not talking about him implementing justice. We're talking about the king who holds that to be a value. Meaning, it could also mean Hashem loves justice in the sense that He wants us to perform justice. Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat can mean that too. He loves righteousness and justice. That's what He wants to see us doing. It's a value. That's what He believes in. It doesn't necessarily denote that that's what He's busy doing right now. And the whole point of the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur period is to focus on the fact this is what He's busy with now. Be aware of that. He's busy with the judgments right now. And therefore it is so imperative not to say Melech Lehetz Dakol Mishpat. Yeah, you got the king part, but you missed the Mishpat part. A king who loves Mishpat does not mean a king who's right now sitting in court. And that's what we have to be emphasizing. We have to be internalizing that during these days, Hashem is sitting on the throne of judgment. That's the whole point. And therefore, yes, it is essential, it's critical to actually say HaMelech HaMishpat, the king of judgment right now. So that's the Shulchan Aruch. Now, we'll just take this discussion one step further, just to note the grammar. Because it seems like a simple grammatical question actually also holds a lot of profundity. The term Hamelech HaMishpat is strange. It doesn't really... It's not standard in Lashon Kodesh. If you want to say the King of Judgment, the way to say that is Melech HaMishpat. That's how you say the King of Judgment. Melech HaMishpat. HaMelech HaMishpat means the King, the Judgment. That doesn't make sense. So Rashi kind of dismisses the question. He says, yeah, sometimes we find that usage too. He shows three or four places around Tanakh that we use that usage too, and that's that. But the Ravid says something so profound that by the time he finishes what he says, and therefore I believe that if you said Melech HaMishpat instead of HaMelech HaMishpat, you got to repeat Shema Netzri. You missed the whole thing. What does he say? He says, on the contrary, we're saying the King, the Judgment. We're not saying King of Judgment. We're saying the King, the Judgment. Meaning what? Meaning as follows. So this is a very profound point. Hashem, this is there's a Lashon in the early authorities, in the early philosophers, that they say Hashem, Habari hu ha-chokhma hu ha-madon. When we say that Hashem is the all-wise, we don't say that Hashem is wise, we say that Hashem is wisdom itself. What does that mean? When you say that a person is wise, that denotes that there's wisdom out there, and this person managed to absorb it. Okay? It's not how it is with Hashem. With Hashem, the reason things are wisdom is because that's what He mandates. You know, we won't spend too much time on the wisdom element, which is really just the mashal, but when we're talking about judgment, justice, when you have a judge who is very just, does that mean that he formulated what justice means? Of course not. That usually won't be justice. That's what despots do. There's justice, and this person appreciates justice. He made a point of determining what justice is, and he implemented. That is a king of judgment, or a person of judgment. But Hashem, it's not like that. Hashem is the judgment. Hashem is the justice, meaning it all comes from within Him. It's not that Hashem figured out, oh, this is right and this is wrong. The reason it's right and it's wrong is because this is what the essence of Hashem dictates. All right and wrong is actually the essence of what Hashem is. It's not that there's right and wrong out there and Hashem likes right and He doesn't like wrong. It's like what we've said many times. The Torah is Hashem's essence, kiviyachol. It's His whole value system. But it's a value system that's not right because it's right and He likes rightness. It's right because that is Hashem's essence. Hashem's essence dictates these ideas. And therefore it's not just that Hashem loves justice. Hashem is justice itself. Justice itself derives from Hashem. Therefore it's so important. Whenever you are setting up a value system, we're going to get to this later in the Gemara too. Whenever you're trying to set up a value system, whenever you're trying to figure out what's right, what's wrong, it all has to be measured against the Torah. There is no objective right and wrong that a person could say, I can sense what's right and wrong. Whatever the Torah is Hashem's essence. That's Hashem's value system. Whatever the Torah deems right, that is justice. Therefore we say Hashem is the justice. To the extent, like we said, that according to the Ravid, if you said Melech HaMishpat, the King of Justice, instead of saying the King, the Justice, you'd have to go back. So the Mishnah Berurah says, well, I said, that's not so. If you said Melech HaMishpat, you don't have to go back. But he does cite the Ravid, and he said, therefore you should be very careful about it. Okay. But that is Lemaisa, more of a side point. The main point is that in the Yom HaNeroim, the entire focus is Hashem as King, Hashem as King, Hashem as King. And also more than that, Hashem as King who is right now sitting in judgment. That's the point that we're focused on now. That's what we're supposed to be carrying through the Yom HaNeroim. Chazal are trying to hammer it in here throughout Tfilas. That consciousness that right now Hashem is busy deciding your case. I don't know if you've ever seen a person who's being tried for something capital, right? And the jury is out deliberating. it's not a very good time to sit and consult with him on some business matter. Right, the guy is preoccupied. He can't have anything else in his mind right now. Right, because he knows that the jury is busy deciding the fate of the rest of his life. That is the consciousness Chazal wants us to have during that Aseres Yemei Teshuva. The consciousness of the fact that right now Hashem is busy mapping out what your year is going to be about. And therefore, yeah, a person is just too... he can't have anything else on his mind. There's a very enlightening letter from the Ktzeis HaChoshen. We discussed the Ktzeis HaChoshen the other day. One of the greatest Talmudic minds of the last 400 years. And there's a sefer of his response. You know, questions that people sent him. Usually, he wasn't getting questions of individuals. He was getting questions of Rabbanim. Right? These were heavy-duty questions that required long, intricate discussions. Okay, so there's one very intricate, one classic tshuva of his that's very intricate, very complex, very complicated. And he writes, in the beginning of that letter, he opens up and he writes, he starts with an apology. He says, I'm sorry I wasn't able to write back to you until now. The state I was in during the Yom Ha'Nerayim, he writes, didn't enable me to focus on these questions. And therefore, as soon as I was able to find the leisure, I wrote to you, but I wasn't able to do it at that time. Now, what's the date of that letter? Erev Shabbos, Erev Sukkos, meaning it was right after the Yom Ha'Nerayim. That was when he found time. Right then he was already relaxed. Erev Shabbos, Erev Sukkos. Just picture what the day looks like. We've found that Erev Sukkos is the busiest day of the year, more than Erev Pesach. Erev Sukkos is the busiest day of the year. You're busy with the last touches on the sukkah, plus the Arba Minim. Right? And it's also Erev Shabbos, which means that usually there are those few things you're going to leave, because you know you can do them on Yom Tiv. On Shabbos you can't. Like, the whole meal has to be prepared beforehand. So, on the Yom Ha'Nerayim, he didn't have the head for it. But on Erev Shabbos, Erev Sukkos, he did. Right? This is just giving us an inkling of the state at one time Jews naturally felt during the Yom Ha'Nerayim. King who loves.
Sorry.
What? Oh, they said Hakel HaMishpat. Yeah, it's a different version of the Gemara.
Oh, so
yeah. What's that? It appears in other commentators. Yeah, meaning there were other authorities have a different version of our Gemara. Yeah. Okay. We'll move on. Okay, just while we're at it, well, I'll just note in parentheses that there are other insertions that we also make during the Yom Ha'Nerayim, right? Zocheinu L'chaim, Micha Moicha, right, etc. Some of us say that you have to go back if you miss those too, but we paskin that you don't, because those don't originate from Chazal. Those actually originate from the Gaonim. It was the Gaonim who instituted those. So those, if you miss, you don't have to go back. But these that Chazal established, essentially you do have to go back. Okay, we'll move on. Omar Rabbe Bar Chinen Esava Mishmei De Rav. Rabbe Bar Chinen, the elder, said in the name of Rav, Kol She Efshaloi Levakesh Rachamim Al Chaveru. If a person is able to daven for somebody else, to invoke mercy for somebody else, Ve Einoi Mevakesh, but he fails to do so, Nikro Choyte. He is considered a sinner. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Gam Anochi, when Shmuel appointed a king for the Jewish people, he gave what was basically a farewell speech. I mean, I'm not going to be your leader anymore. Yet, he said, I will continue davening for you, even though I'm no longer the official leader. I'm, of course, going to continue davening for you. Your concerns will be in my heart. To the Jewish people. So he said, Gam Anochi, so me too, Cholilali, Chas V'Shalom, he says, Mechatoy LaHashem, that I should sin to Hashem, Mechadoy LeHispalel Ba'adchem, and to refrain from davening to you. So you see that Shmuel is saying, it would be a sin on my part to refrain from davening to you. So if so, we're saying that yes, any, if you know of a person who needs rachmanis and you don't daven for him, that is considered a sin. What's that? Who has a tzara? The person has a tzara. The truth is, yes, we should be conscious in our tefillahs of the tzaras of Klal Yisrael. Let's understand this. Often, you know, let's say you would know about a person who's very sick, and you could heal him. You know the secret. You could heal him. But you're too busy, you're too preoccupied, you don't get around to it. And therefore, he's just suffering. Right? You better understand that that's a lousy thing to do. Right? A person has to realize that tefillah is a tool that you have to affect things that you might not think you can. Yes, you hear about somebody sick. What can I do? You know, I feel terrible. I really feel terrible. If I could do something, I would. Maybe I'd send over a supper. But what can I do? But the answer is that you can do. You have to realize that tefillah is another means of ishtadlis. Just like sometimes you can do ishtadlis by actually going and treating the person medically if you know how, there's another means of ishtadlis. Tefillah. Daven for the person. The person should be sensitive to the sufferings of those around him and should be having it in mind in his tefillahs. I don't know if this necessarily means that you have to mention them by name. You have to have a long list of everybody you hear about sick around the globe. I don't know if it necessarily means that. There are people who do that. That's certainly a righteous practice. But the point is that when you're davening, you should be saying, when you're going through the brachas and the different requests, you should be conscious of the suffering of others and put in a heartfelt tefillah for them too. You don't go through the tefillah and say, one minute, which are important now and which can I dream in? Everyone's healthy in the family. So if I know I can dream in. Or Parnassa is okay. Baruch Aleinu, I can dream it. Oh, you know that other Jews are going through difficulties. You have to put in a heartfelt tefillah for them too. And therefore, I don't know, my feeling is, Rachmana Litzlan, you get all the time stuffed into your mailboxes. If you can't read Hebrew, you're kind of in a little bit of a, what we'll call ignorant bliss. You're lucky you don't read these things. But you get stuck into your mailboxes more and more and more and more horror stories, Rachmana Litzlan. You get these color pamphlets, right? And each one, it's a pamphlet that has a whole horror story about some family in Ashdod. What's that? Oh, they have it up in English. Yeah. But I said, Mamish, every day there's three of them in the mailbox. Every day. And the feeling is, what are you going to do? You're going to give. How much can you give to all of them? Rachmana Litzlan, Klal Yisrael doesn't have enough money to cover, all of Klal Yisrael together doesn't have enough money to cover these needs. So what are you going to do? So is there a point in reading it? So you just take it out and toss it out. What can you do? You give to the local Kupa Shel Tzedakah, which is what you should be doing, the local needy, and you know, you wish you could do more than that, and that's that. But the truth is that there's a purpose in reading it too. Again, as long as it's within a healthy extent. If it's really going to start getting you down, don't do this. But there's a purpose in reading it too, just in order for a person to be attuned to the suffering of Klal Yisrael. To be aware that people are going through very difficult times. This should inspire you. Yes, what can I give already? Now you see these things come in, Rachmana Litzlan, 3-4 a day. But what it does do is, it makes me a little more aware. People have the, you know, we have, each person has his own personal tekelah. But besides that, you're aware that there's this going on and that going on and that. How much longer can we handle it? And therefore, you put in more of a heartfelt feeling in those specific feelings in Shema Yisrael. And in general, you develop more of a desperate feeling for the Geula. That's an end in and of itself. If you feel more desperate for the Geula, and therefore, you know, about a third of Shema Yisrael are brachas that deal with that. But the Geula, a lot of times we breeze through them because we don't feel that they're so relevant. The more you become attuned to the suffering of Klal Yisrael, the more heartfelt your feelings for the Geula will be. So, there's a point, don't think, I can't give, I'm already giving more than I'm capable to, so what's the point in reading these things? It's good to be sensitive, to be attuned, just to know what's going on. To know that there's suffering in Klal Yisrael. Be'ezras Hashem? Yes? You sure it says that? Check again. I don't think so. And if yes, it'll be a very, very few. It says, the Rambam describes what the natural state of the world will look like if the Mashiach comes. There's going to be unbelievable plenty. There will be so much of everything, everything precious. People will just have leisure to sit and focus on Hashem, and that's all. That's the Rambam's description of the natural Geula, that when he goes with the approach, the Geula will not be supernatural. Okay. So now the Gemara takes this a step further. Omar Rava, Rava says, "In Talmud Chacham Hu, if that person is a Talmud Chacham, Tzarich Sheyechla Atzma Elov, you have to make yourself sick over him. My time." So the Gemara says, "Well, what's the source for that?" Ilema Mishum Diksiv Ein Choyle Mikem Alai. Shaul HaMelech, at the end of his reign / the end of his life, wasn't in a very good state. Among other things, he had a deep melancholy. He was suffering from a deep melancholy, and he was also plagued by his concern that David was trying to usurp the throne. And he started developing these neurotic feelings that everybody around him is plotting with David, and they're keeping it a secret. So one time, he expressed it as follows: "Ein chayla mikem alai. None of you are getting sick over me," he said to his aides, the people around, his advisors. "The goyles azni. Nobody is revealing my ear," meaning nobody's letting me know, all of you know what David is plotting, and none of you are telling me about it. But the way he expressed it was, "None of you are getting sick over me," implying that that would be the expectation. People should be getting sick with concern over Shaul's tzaris. So you see that would be the expectation. So the Gemara says, Dilma Melech Shani. Maybe a king is different. So the Gemara says, meaning, who said this applies for every Talmud Chacham? A king, all of Klal Yisrael depends on him. Fine. It's Elameha. Rather, we see it from the following. Vani Bachaloisom Levush Yisok. And David is complaining about the betrayal of people who had been his colleagues. Doeg and Achitofel were two sages, Torah sages at the time. Well, it was me, this were not perfectly developed. But these were two of the greatest Torah sages at the time, who at the time had been from David's Beis Medrash. They had all been learning together. And he says, we were in the same Chabura, we were in the same study group. And he was complaining about their betrayal, and he says, Vani Bachalisam, when they were sick, Levushi Sak, my dress would be sackcloth. He continues and he says, Inesi Batsang Napshi, I afflicted myself with fasting. I forgot the exact words of the pasuk, but it's something to the effect of v'cholyoy el chekitoshu, and their ailments would come back to me. Meaning David is saying, I mamish felt as though I was going through it with them. I made myself sick in the sense that I mamish felt like I was going through what they were going through. Okay. I'll just note that these are tall orders. Right? But first of all, yeah, it's already enough of an order to say that we have to be distressed and davening for every person who has tzaras. Upon the sign, we know so many people with tzaras all over the place. And I was saying even more than that. Once it's a Talmud Chacham, you have to make yourself sick over him. It's a tall order. What if there are three Talmud Chachamim? Where does that leave me? Three Talmud Chachamim are going through with sorrow. To make myself triply sick. What's that?
You think that's the obligation to visualize it and to go through the whole process?
That's if we're modifying it. Otherwise it means literally, make yourself sick. Meaning, have sleepless nights one after the other until you haven't been yotzei your chiyuv until you are sick in bed because of your efforts on his behalf. So what you said is the more lenient approach. That mamish feel like you're there with him in it. But whatever it is, it's drastic. You have to be mamish tearing yourself apart over him. And that's something of a tall order. So there... That's never a reason for us not to daven. We can't say, you know what? I hear that somebody's sick. I'm going to go see how he's accepting it. If he's accepting it the right way, that means he's accepting it ba'ava. He likes it. I don't need a daven for him. That's not our approach. We don't accept other people suffering ba'ava. What? No. So we're being told that you do. Lamaisa, he's suffering. You have to get sick over it. That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm saying. It's a tall order. That's what I mean. So, how are we supposed to apply this practically? So I'll say two things from two opposite angles. First of all, there is a sefer called Omer Shikha, which it's a play on words. Shikha is one of the types you have to leave in the field, the things that you drop. The Omer of the Shikha means a pile of Shikha. But he's Omer Shikha, I say the forgotten things. It's an interesting play on words. What he basically does is give explanations for precepts that are presented in the Gemara that the Poskim do not present. Sometimes the Gemara will say something, and for some reason the Poskim don't present it. Yeah. So there's no such thing as not picking up on it. They picked up on everything. If they omitted it, it's deliberate. And the question is why. And that he has a sefer dedicated to explaining that. Why did the Poskim omit this? And one of the things he notes is that this does not appear in the Poskim. The Shulchan Aruch rules in the Halachos of Bikur Cholim that if you visited a sick person and you didn't daven for him, you were not yoitze the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. That is a part and parcel of the obligation of Bikur Cholim. That is Shulchan Aruch Halacha L'maisa. What's that? Presumably also not. By the way, Bikur Cholim doesn't necessarily mean to pay a visit. Sometimes by paying the person a visit and sitting around and schmoozing, you're annoying him. Bikur Cholim should be understood from the term Bikur as in assessing. Bikoret, critique, criticism. It's called Bikoret, when you check things, when you evaluate things. It means to evaluate the situation, see what you can contribute. That's really what Bikur Cholim means. Whatever it is, it's the Shulchan Aruch Tozru Al-Alcha L'maisa. You went, you visited a sick person, you helped, etc. You didn't daven for him, you weren't yotzei. But, the Omer Shikha notes, he doesn't say that if you fail to do so, you're a chayte, right? A Gemara said more than that. Not just that you're not yotzei in the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. It's a sin in and of itself. You know of someone who's sick in France. You can't go visit him. It's a sin not to daven. The Poskim don't say that. And the Poskim don't say anything about making yourself sick over a Talmud Chacham. So he says a very novel twist. Which, I don't know, I'm saying it with a grain of salt. I'm adding my own grain of salt. And he says, "Kol she'efshal lo levakish." Anybody who is in position to request has these chiyuv. What does that mean? So he says, "No, the Gemara did not mean to impose this upon everybody. It's too much. There are people whose tefillahs are accepted. The Rebbe, right? Which Rebbe?" Each person can apply it to his own. But the Rebbe's tefillahs are always accepted, right? Whoever your Rebbe is. The Rebbe's tefillahs are always accepted. That we know. So, if you're the Rebbe, person, like Reb Chanina ben Daisa, is all of our Rebbe. Reb Chanina ben Daisa, he was known for the potency of his tefillahs. Such a person who knows that his tefillahs have that effect, he has these chiyuv. But it's not something that can be imposed on the general public. This is his suggestion. Very interesting approach. I'm mentioning it, and I'm saying, okay, we're here. But what's that? Basically, that's what he says. And therefore, the Poskim didn't cite it, because Shulchan Aruch is presenting Halacha v'Klal Yisrael. Okay, that's what he says. Fine. You can take that, perhaps with limited authority. But I'll just note something, a more general a comment, and that is to understand that the truth is that great people did have a much greater capacity for these things. In general today, we have a limited capacity for spiritual sensitivity, for emotions, etc. Right? We talk about so many things that we're meant to be conscious of at all times. It requires a certain level of hyper-alertness, which is very difficult for us in our times to even start encompassing all the different feelings and dynamics that we should be feeling about Hashem and about every Jew, etc., etc. Very hard. In earlier times, people simply encompassed more. Yes, it would be possible for a person to walk around really carrying the suffering of many people. I'll just give two little examples. The Belzer Rebbe. Not the current Belzer Rebbe, but the previous Belzer Rebbe. Died, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago. He was known mamish as a sublime individual, Aaron Belz. He was known, one of these people, I'm not saying it because of that, but one of the people that the Omer Shikla is describing. Everybody knew he was in a different sphere, completely in a different plane. Lived a life of complete Kedusha, and he was known as a miracle worker. But that's not what we admire. What we admire is the means of getting there. The intense avodah that he put in every day. Whatever it is, he had the hours of seeing people. How did it work? The way it worked with him was, you handed a note. It was called a kvittel. You handed a note. And the note had a request with a name. I have a problem with Parnassa. My name is Shimon Ben Zlata. I have a problem with Shiduchim. I have a problem with health. That was basically how it worked. You would give him the note. He would look at it. He would give a bracha. Okay. There would always be long lines. Then one day, there was a long line of people with their kvittlach, and he was seeing one kvittl after the other. Finally, it was at the end of the line. Each person with his kvittl, with his note, was an issue of about half a minute. Okay? There was one person left in the line, and the Rebbe said, okay, I'm finished for today. I'm exhausted, we're finished. So the Gabbai said, there's only one person left. The Rebbe said, I'm spent. One, to read one more kvittl. The Rebbe looked at him and he said, you think it's about reading? Do you know what each kvittel, what an experience it is for me to read a kvittel? You know what each kvittel takes out of me? So this is a person who would go through all that in 30 seconds. We're talking about a person with a much broader capacity. This was a person who, yes, each kvittel that he read was a whole emotional experience for him. He simply encompassed so much more. If we would work that way, we wouldn't be able to handle more than one or two kvittlach an hour. Right? But this was how he worked. This was, we're talking about a person who's on a much greater level with a much greater capacity. So, yes. And this is something we can't relate to. But on the contrary, I would say, we won't necessarily go with what the Omer Shikha said, but this Gemara gives us an idea of what sort of people we were talking about in those times. Okay? That'll be that.